The hour of 12:30 having arrived, I'm going to call to order Higher Education Finance and Policy. Members, today we're going to put together the Higher Education Finance Bill, and there'll be a series of motions that I will make to put the bill together. Once we have the bill in the correct form, we will then open it up for discussion and any other amendments or testimony on the bill. I also want to draw your attention to the agenda. Number five is House File 983. That's the lien bill. Now, that's also going to be our vehicle bill. And for members who don't understand what a vehicle bill is, it's a bill you park on the House floor in case you need it if everything else doesn't quite go the way you have anticipated. So, when we're done with everything, we will put the lien bill in shape. It'll just have policy in it, and then we will move it to the House floor in anticipation of Representative Lien carrying the entire higher education finance policy bill if we don't get to work it out with the Senate. I'm hopeful that we will. So we'll get to that once we get the primary bill finished. So with that, I'm going to move that House File 1692 be recommended to pass and be re-referred to the Committee on Ways and Means. I'm now looking at the DE1 amendment, which is a delete everything amendment to House File 1692. And members, I would hope that we would just get the bill in shape, and once the bill is in shape, we can debate it or amend it after that. So I'm going to move the DE1 amendment. All those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Opposed, nay. Motion prevails. The amendment is adopted. I'm now going to move the A4 amendment, and this would be most of the policy that we have discussed with the two caucuses and over the course of the session. All those in favor of the A4 amendment signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Any opposed, nay. Motion prevails. The amendment is adopted. Members, we now have the bill in its form, and what I'm going to do is go back to the DE1, and I'm going to have Ms. Adrians walk us through the changes. So, Ms. Adrians?
Mr. Chair and members, I'll actually just start with the first number change, and then I think I'm going to let Mr. Gehring take over from there to explain the policy stuff. So the only number change in the delete all, is that what?
Well, we can go to either one, but whichever she wants to work off. Which is she most think?
Yeah, I'm sorry, Mr. Chair.
If we go to
I meant the A4. Did you want me to start with that or with
the DE?
Okay.
Mr. Adams, why don't you walk us through the DE1 just to
Okay. Sorry about that. I'm ready.
That's all right.
Okay, Mr. Chair and members. What this is, so Article 1 will show all of the higher education appropriations, and if you had a chance to look at the spreadsheets that were distributed last week, these numbers should reflect the numbers that are in the spreadsheet as well. So in the what it starts with is Section 1, and this is the summary of appropriations, so it just shows for the entire bill what the general fund numbers will be, and the total for the 2014 and 15 biennium. That's on line 10 of the first page, and that's the approximately $2.7 billion figure. Then we have in this committee a little bit of healthcare access money that runs through the University of Minnesota. That's a little bit over $4 million for the biennium for sort of a grand total of $2.7 billion for all of the items that are in the bill. Below that, it shows a summary by agency. And so this is all funds. This is not just general fund money, although for the Office of Higher Education for Minsky and for the Mayo Clinic, those I think should all be general fund numbers. And then the only difference is that healthcare access fund number that's in the University of Minnesota. So that those totals are the same. It's just a distribution among the different systems. If you go to page 2, Section 3, This is all for the Minnesota Office of Higher Education. So the total appropriation for the office is almost $196 million in 2014, and then in 2015 it's just a little bit over $196 million. And the only change that was made from the base that would have been in place for the Office of Higher Education for 2014 and 15 would be the change that was made to the formula for independent students. And I want to point out which rider that shows up in. So if you look at the bottom of page 2, this is where it talks about the assigned family responsibility, and that's the portion of the formula that was changed. So for independent students without dependents other than a spouse, it would be 53%. That's on line 34. And then if you'll flip over to page 3 at the very top, independent students with dependents other than a spouse, that's changed to 80%. And currently this is just for the 2014 and 15 biennium. So then for 2016 and 17, it would revert back to the other to the numbers that were previously set in law. All of the other numbers for the Office of Higher Education remain the same as they were for the base. Now, if you look at the bottom of page 4, this is section 4. This is where the MNSCU appropriations start. And on line 26, this is the total appropriation. And in 2014, it's just under $571 million. And for the second year of the biennium, it's just below $598 million. And the only changes made in the MNSCU area, that rider is on page 5, subdivision 3 under operations and maintenance. This funding is to help offset a potential 3% tuition increase. And you'll see this in the A4 amendment. There's a change made in here that it's for undergraduate students only. So the additional funding in this area are on lines 4 and 5. It'll be $25.5 million in the first fiscal year, and then $52.5 million in the second. And that $52.5 million number, that will be ongoing. So that will go on to the 2016 and 17. It'll be added to the base for those years. Then if you look at Section 5 on page 5, this is where the University of Minnesota appropriations start. And like I said, they have there's general fund money and the healthcare access fund money as well. The total appropriation for both funds is just under $571 million in the first year and $585 million in the second year. There were a couple of changes. The first, there is also an offset for tuition relief. That rider language is at the top of page 6. So the amounts on line 1, it's $14.2 million in the first fiscal year, and then $28.4 million in the second fiscal year. And this is also to offset an approximate tuition increase of 3%. And in this area, it would only be for undergraduate in-state resident students. And then the number, the $28.4 million, that would be ongoing as well into the next biennium and added to the base. On the bottom of page 6, this is where the MnDrive appropriation shows up on line 30. It's $9 million in each fiscal year for that program, and this was one of the governor's recommendations. His recommendation was for $18 million per year. In this bill, it's $9 million, and that's an ongoing appropriation as well. And then everything else is language that has previously been in the bill until you get to page 10. Under paragraph D, where it says system special, there's an additional appropriation for labor education service. This was in the governor's proposal as well. He was taking it out of his MnDrive appropriation. And the university, they gave us information that this is more the proper place to put it under the system specials. And so it's an additional $125,000 added to the base each year for that program. And then the Mayo Clinic is Section 6 at the bottom. And that appropriation did not change. That's the base. It's $1.35 million for each year. And Mr. Chair and members, I think that's it.
Mr. Gehrig, then would you do the A4, please?
Sure. Mr. Chair, so what I'll do is walk quickly through the policy changes and the other technical changes that are contained in the A4 amendment, and also I'll reference back to the DE1 in a couple of places just so you can see the language I'm referring to. So starting on the A4 amendment on line 1.3, this is an update to a dollar amount that was incorrectly included in the DE1 amendment related to the tuition maximum for state grant program. Line 1.4 through 1.5 is updated language related to the tuition cap that's currently in the bill as it applies to the MNSCU system. So what this does is specify that the tuition cap only applies to undergraduate tuition rates for MNSCU. And it also eliminates the need to calculate a total cost of attendance for purposes of determining whether a student's total bill has gone up during the cap period. So currently what's in the bill is it caps tuition and then also prohibits MNSCU from increasing fees or other charges that would offset that tuition relief. And so the bill right now would require them to sort of calculate that total cost of attendance. That calculation is eliminated. Line 1.6 through 1.21 is language that addresses some concerns that were raised about the ability of MNSCU to fund current contractual obligations. Apparently, there was some testimony that some contractual obligations would not be able to be funded with the current appropriation amount in the bill. This language specifies that to the extent that the appropriations contained in the bill don't sufficiently meet their contractual obligations for labor or other program contracts, the Board of Trustees has to fund those obligations through reduced costs associated with central administration of the system and executive administration on individual campuses, or through reallocation of non-state funds received by the system, which could potentially include use of reserve accounts. There's a prohibition in this language that specifies that reductions in costs cannot be assessed by increasing costs on students or reducing programs that directly impact students or by reducing programs that are newly authorized by the legislature in this bill. Line 1.23 through 1.25 is technical language updating the University of Minnesota's tuition cap language just to have it conform more closely to the MNSCU tuition cap language. Line 1.26 and 1.27, as well as line 2.1 and page 2, is a technical update to the language related to an appropriation for the Labor Education Service at the University of Minnesota. It's clarifying that the appropriation amount that's in the bill is in addition to the Labor Education Service base amount and not just a standalone one-time amount. Page 2, line 2 through page 4, line 2, is new language that the chair has referred to on a number of occasions. This is the reporting language that the legislative auditor has worked on over the past several months. A quick summary of what's in this language. Basically, what it's doing is adding additional reporting for both the University of Minnesota and the Minnesota State Colleges and Universities system. This reporting would come with their biennial budget requests, and it requires them to report a five-year history of system-wide expenditures by functional area and by objects of expenditures. It requires them to report a five-year history of total instructional expenditures per full-year equivalent student by level of instruction. It requires them to report a five-year history of the system's total revenues by funding source. And then some additional language that is a current reporting requirement in law is continues to be in force and in place in the bill. On the bottom of page 3, there's language that requires the systems to coordinate with the Commissioner of Management and Budget and the Office of Higher Ed to develop a consistent reporting practice for all the information that's required to be reported in the bill, and then also requires each system to be able to respond to requests for financial analyses and other information that are more detailed than what's specifically required in this section of statute. On page 4, section 2 is the technical update to a federal law citation. This is language that was contained in the governor's recommendation in House File 983. Sections 3 through 13, starting on page 4, is also language that comes from House File 983, which is the governor's recommendation. This is all language that's basically codifying existing administrative rules related to terminating the eligibility of an institution to participate in state financial aid programs. And those sections run through page 7, line 14 through section 13. Section 14 on page 7 is language that's also from House File 983, which allows an additional semester of eligibility for a person to receive a child care grant if they have a major illness, which substantially limits their ability to complete a term of enrollment. Page 8, section 15. Is an increase in the maximum amount of the child care grant from $2,600 to $2,800 per academic year, and the Office of Higher Education has indicated this increase is something that they can absorb using their existing appropriation amount, so there's no additional fiscal cost to doing this. Page 8, section 16 is an updated citation again to federal law related to independent students, so this is just a technical correction so that the law is cited appropriately. Page 9, sections 17 and 18 related to procedures related to surety bonds for certain types of institutions that must file them in the event that they fall below certain financial standards for participation in federal financial aid programs. So there's language about how the surety bond must cancel, and then some other technical changes that requires them to be notified of their right to appeal, their cancellation, and some other provisions in that section. This is also from House File 983. On page 10, section 19, this is language that provides, this is the MOOC language that's been talked about previously, which exempts them from needing to register with the Office of Higher Education if the educational programs they're providing are at no cost to the student, so there's no tuition charged, then they would be exempt under this language. Line 10.20 and 10.21 is an update to existing language that's contained in the DE1 amendment currently. So you can find this policy language in Article 2 of the DE1 on page 11. Section 1 on page 11 of the DE1 prohibits the MNSCU from including in a contract an authorization or a provision that allows for a discretionary or mandatory bonus payment. And on line 10.20, the bonus payment term is clarified so that it includes bonuses and any other performance-based incentive payment for certain employees at MNSCU. Section 2 on page 11 of the DE1 is similar language that specifies that the state is not appropriating any money that can be used to pay mandatory or discretionary bonus payments for certain employees at the University of Minnesota. And then on 10.21 of the A4, again, this is updating the bonus payment phrasing to provide that it includes a bonus payment or any other performance-based incentive payment. Section 23, which starts on page 10 of the A4 amendment, is another section related to registration and oversight of the MOOC programs, exempting them from required registration and licensure by the Office of Higher Education. On page 12, section 24 relates to public safety officer survivor grants. This, again, is a section from House File 983 that allows an additional semester of eligibility in case a recipient of one of these grants has a major illness, which limits their ability to complete a term of enrollment. And section 25 adds a few repealers into the bill. Paragraph A on line 12.15 is a repealer of the Higher Education Advisory Council, which the chair had mentioned at the last hearing. And lines 12.16 and 12.17 is repeal of the existing administrative rules that are all being recodified in substantially the same form in statute related to termination of institutions from financial aid eligibility, which I mentioned previously. And, Mr. Chair, that's the extent of the policy in the bill.
Thank you, Mr. King. I think we have one more amendment, and members should have it. Representative Winkler, why don't we deal with your amendment now, and if it goes in, then we'll have the bill in the form, unless there are other amendments the members might have. So, Representative Winkler.
Mr. Chair, I would move the A5 amendment. And members, you see some handwritten expert legislative drafting on this amendment. That's mine. I've checked it with Mr. Gehring, and he assures me that I'm almost as good as he is at writing legislative language. So the handwritten version is included in the amendment that I'm offering. Members, this is a it should be a pretty straightforward amendment. We have an existing set of technology tools in the Minsky system. They are interested in moving away from some of those tools. I think it's important that as we look at a technology platform for digital learning portfolios and other things, that we consider what we have in place already before we start buying new things. And so this would preserve this technology for potential use later. That's what it does, and I'd ask for your support.
Representative Winkler, do we have, I believe Minsky is the current main body that has this. Could we have them come down and just testify that they're agreeable to the language and that there's no problem with it?
Mr. Chair, certainly. I think they will say that's the case.
Welcome to the committee, and please identify yourself for the record.
Good afternoon, Mr. Chair and members. My name is Laura King, and I'm the Vice Chancellor for Finance for the Minnesota State Colleges and Universities. I don't have the amendment in front of me, Mr. Chair, but if a copy can be made available, I'd be happy to take a look
yes.
at it.
Yes.
Mr. Chair, we would find no objection to this amendment.
All right. Further discussion to the amendment, or anyone else wish to testify? Representative Swedinski.
Mr. Chair, thank you. My question would just kind of be in general. It's my understanding the U of M would be separate from this because they have certain ownership rights within intellectual property. When it comes to the general fund, you know, if it goes to the Office of Higher Education, it'd be more likely to be, you know, if there's some financial gain, potentially, how would something like that work out?
Representative Winkler.
If something was to be sold or...
Representative Winkler.
Mr. Chair, Representative Swedinski, there should be no financial gain. This would move it to the Office of Higher Education, so not only would this be available at Minsky institutions, but if it works, it would also be available at the U of M and other private nonprofit education institutions if they so chose. This is kind of a burgeoning area of development in both in connecting K-12 through higher ed and into careers. We have some tools, and I want to make sure we're preserving them and evaluating their use potentially statewide.
Representative Swedinski.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Just that's kind of my question. Like if we were to use it, maybe fee for service, so if we did use it for private schools, those funds would just go to the office, you know, for a use, you know, a fee-for-service type thing situation, if that would potentially get grown. That's kind of maybe where that would go is the office rather than Minsky, which where they were developed.
Representative Winkler.
Mr. Chair, Representative Swedinski, I think that would be up to the people who are, to the institutions who would work on it, whether it makes sense to charge a fee or whether if it worked, maybe no fee would be charged because they're all serving Minnesota students.
Okay. Representative Brenner.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Representative Winkler, I'm just seeking some clarification because I heard from some faculty in my district regarding eFolio in particular. They were concerned about their ability to continue to use it in the classroom. And could you address that concern, whether that opportunity would still remain?
Representative Winkler.
Mr. Chair, Representative Breiner, that's exactly the intention of the amendment, is to maintain its use because it's my understanding that Minsky is interested in moving away from it.
Representative Brenner.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Thank you, Representative Winkler.
Okay, further discussion on the amendment? Seeing none, all those in favor of the amendment signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Any opposed, nay. Motion prevails. The amendment is adopted. Members, the bill is in its form, so I can either have discussion from the members or we can open it up for testimony. Do we have members who wish to speak, or would you wish to hear from the public? All right. Do we have anyone who wishes to testify on the bill? Vice Chancellor King is sort of moving in that direction, and somebody else is moving Mr. Fitzenreiter. Whoever gets there first wins, or you both can sit there and alternate. Welcome to the committee, and please identify yourself for the record.
Mr. Chairman, members of the committee, Richard Fitzenreiter, the Chief Financial Officer at the University of Minnesota. Just wanted to take a few minutes to thank the committee. It's been a long, difficult session. Hard topics were discussed here about higher education. We've, on behalf of the President of the Board of Regents, appreciate the difficult work. We understand the tough questions you've asked the university. You've provided us with an increase in our appropriation that will directly benefit Minnesota resident undergraduates and our ability to hold tuition for those students to no increase over the next 2 years. We're grateful for that. I know the students, Minnesota students, will greatly appreciate that appropriation. We also appreciate the fact that you've made a significant down payment on our MnDrive program. That was important to the President of the Board of Regents, and we know this is an important step along this journey. There's still many weeks left in the session, but we again are grateful for what you've provided us this session for the next 2 years, and thanks again.
Vice Chancellor King.
Mr. Chair, thank you. Laura King, Vice Chancellor for Finance at the Minnesota State Colleges and Universities. I, too, want to thank the committee for the very close and diligent work that went on here this term on the budget. We think the questions that were asked and answered really provided you with a rich set of information about how our system operates and the forces that work on our system. We also appreciate the chair's outreach in drafting the reporting language. And we find it quite agreeable and are very comfortable with it. And similarly, we appreciate the positive targets for reinvestment in higher education. It's been a long time since this body has been able to invest in what we think is one of the most critical enterprises that the state supports. We also understand the committee's passion about student debt. That has been a board's concern as well. And we structured our budget request in a shared strategy to address student debt. As we testified, our student debt levels are the lowest in the state, both on an absolute basis and in terms of the graduate levels of debt. That's a commitment of ours, and it's been a commitment of our board. In putting our budget proposal together, we had the support of both the student associations, and we're grateful for that. They've been great partners to us in formulating our budget request. But I have to say to you today that I have grave concerns about the amendment that went in this morning that controls our budget process for responding to the tuition limitation. We have concerns that we understand you have concerns about the consequence of the language on budget gaps at our colleges and universities. That concern should be real because of the way our budget is packaged. The consequence of the language really does face us with some serious budget cuts. Under the amendment, we would have a gap of $17 million in our financial plan for compensation, which is about a 25% gap in our financing. Since we don't control negotiations for the classified units or the health insurance costs, that gap really will land on our negotiations with the faculty unions. And that's a great concern for us. The language targets reductions in our administration budget, which, as we shared with you earlier this season, is already the smallest budget in our operation. We have fewer administrators than we did a decade ago. The real cost of educating a Minscu student is down over 10%. Administration as a percentage of our total expenditures is down to just over 11% of our total budget. And as you'll recall, we're already ranked in the bottom 10 nationwide in spending on administration. It's simply not possible for us to balance our budget on the faculty compensation increases for 54% of our employees on the portion of our budget that represents just slightly more than 10% of our total spending. So we're really concerned about that language. We look forward, I hope, to an opportunity to talk some more about it in the days ahead. We continue to recommend to you the board's budget proposal and would be grateful for an opportunity to talk more about it. Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Discussion. Thank you both, and I'm hopeful that in the next year and a half, as this reporting language goes into effect, we will be able to establish an oversight relationship that will be productive for everyone. So thank you
both.
Thank you. Further testimony to the bill. Seeing none, then I will renew my motion that House File 1692 as amended be re-referred to the Ways and Means Committee. All those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Any opposed, nay. Motion prevails. Members, we're going to go to the vehicle bill, as I told you earlier. This is actually Representative Lean's bill. So, Representative Lean, would you like to move House File 983 be recommended to pass and be sent to the General Register?
So moved, Mr. Chair.
Representative Lean, there is an amendment that we would need to put on the bill. It's a delete everything amendment, the DE1. This would put the bill in the form for a vehicle. So, Representative Lean, to the DE1 amendment.
I will move the DE1 amendment, Mr. Chair.
Members, this is similar to what we had already covered. It simply allows this bill to become a vehicle bill should we need it on the House floor toward the end of session. I'm hopeful that we will not. All those in favor of the DE1 amendment signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Any opposed, nay. Motion prevails. The amendment is adopted. Any discussion to the vehicle bill? Seeing no discussion, Representative Lean renews his motion that House File 983 be recommended to pass and be sent to the General Register. All those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Any opposed, nay. Motion prevails. Members, with that, the committee for the time being, Representative Winkler.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I just wanted to make a quick note as we move this bill out of committee that I have never served on a legislative committee quite like this one this year. And I'm accustomed to your somewhat spare style in legislative hearings, one in which we had overviews exclusively until we came time to pass the omnibus bill out and then have it pass out with no dissent and virtually no discussion, because I think everyone understands, having had an opportunity to thoroughly understand these budgets and what's at stake for students and the institutions, what we're doing here. And I think we largely agree that we need to take a new direction, and it's a good first step. So I just... It's been interesting, and I think very it's been I think a good model. Kill us with facts, and we'll all agree at the end.
Representative Winkler, it might be that I spent 37 years in the classroom, and I spent almost all that time teaching advanced students, so I had the best and the brightest, and I think here I've got the best and the brightest of Minnesota. So there was a similarity in how we could work together. But I want to thank you for your patience, particularly Representative Nornes and the Republican Caucus. It's been great to work with. And all of you, some of you, it's your first time on this committee. We learned a lot, but we have not learned everything. And as we go into conference committee, there will still be a lot to learn. Whatever the target is, it will not be an easy target. There are a lot of things that are not in our bill that were in the governor's and in the Senate's bill. And I don't know where the target will lie. And as we've said earlier, we need to pass a rather large revenue bill to sustain these targets. The revenue bill doesn't pass, these targets don't exist. So I want to thank all of you. Representative Norton.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and interesting is a word for this year's committee, that for certain. And I just want to say, while I didn't object to anything that we're doing here, I do want to say I do have concerns about the bonus issue. Not because I think everyone deserves bonuses, but I think we have moved into more of a performance-based culture in this society, and I'm a little worried, and I'm trusting that as this process moves forward, there'll be more discussion about that particular issue so that we don't negate a performance-based tool that I'm seeing in the K-12 systems and that I think could be used appropriately with a little help, and I'm hoping that's what you're offering here.
Well, Representative Norton, I think when we take a look at the salaries of the administrators that receive bonuses, there's a difference between receiving a bonus and receiving a salary that is, by any standard of anyone who lives in our districts, large. And when you look at what happened with higher ed over the course of the salaries and the bonuses, and we just sent you the bonus totals for the last few years. Historic cuts, historic tuition increases, and historic debt. Mm-hmm. And for that, on top of very generous salaries, there were bonuses. Something's got to change, and I would say the performance base that you're referring to is not the performance base that's happening in K-12. This is the performance base of a group of trustees who modeled it after a business system that was in Wall Street, that was in the banking system, that was in the automotive system and the real estate system, and it's that type of reward where you reward the very top for making decisions, whether they're good or bad, and these happen to be, I would argue, bad, is inappropriate. That's our difference.
As I was saying, I didn't vote against what you're doing because I have been one of the ones that has been holding feet to the fire all year on these very issues. We are in complete agreement. I just think there might be a better way to structure salaries so that bonuses could be used for incentive. But I agree with you that the outrageous outlays at the beginning might be dropped down and then performance based on how well you perform. And that's what I'm holding out, that we don't throw the baby out with the bathwater. And frankly, in the K-12 systems, we are using performance for every employee, not the administrators, right, for every employee. And that's where I think we need to move so that there's a fairness throughout our system and we acknowledge the great work that's done in our classrooms and by other employees in our system so that they might work toward and deserve those bonuses as well.
And Representative Norton, I concur, and I'm hopeful that the reporting language with the legislative auditor will provide us with that. There was another hand up. I didn't see. Representative Grunheim.
Oh, thank you, Mr. Chair. Yeah, I just wanted to tell you I appreciate meeting ahead of time and having a chance to discuss the issue one-on-one with you in your office, you know, with the Republican caucus, and just being treated as equals right across the board in terms of information, everything else. You have definitely set a standard, I think, that should be emulated by both sides of the aisle in the future, at least from my perspective. And as far as Representative Winkler's comments, I just say amen, okay? The other thing, as far as performance bonus, you know, if the salaries are where they're at, maybe we want to take part of the existing salary and turn it into a bonus, 15 to 20%. Just a suggestion, okay? I know it's not going to be popular, but if the salaries are where they're at already, why not turn about 15 to 20% of their existing salary into a performance bonus, okay? And that way, we're dealing with the height of the or the excess, what we perceive to be at least in the salaries, and yet we're tying it to part of that existing salary to a bonus performance. Just a thought.
Representative Grunheim, you bring up another issue. I've stated this before and I'll repeat it now. I think we have to take tuition increases as seriously as we take tax increases, and they have to be treated in the same way. They are permanent, they're long-lasting, and they have unintended consequences. So if tuition is going to be raised in this committee, we are going to have to make sure we understand how it's being raised, where it's being raised, and the testimony today. Is it being raised for contractual and operational expenses, or is it being raised for something else, and how? And we have to understand that, and then we have to approve it. So I think the onus has to be on us, too. Obviously, these two boards, the trustees and the regents, leave much to be desired in their ability to explain how these tuition increases were raised and what they were raised to cover. They apparently have no ability in raising tuition on someone else, and that has got to stop. We have to know, and the public has to know, and I would like to see it reversed. Representative Doral, do you have a motion for us?
Mr. Chair, I move to pass the minutes of April 8th.
Any discussion? Seeing no discussion, all those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Any opposed, nay. Motion prevails. Minutes are adopted. And with that, meeting is adjourned.